and WBAI.org on the web. Where are my keys? Anybody see my keys? Who took my keys?
You've got to start off each day with a song. Now, even when things go wrong, you'll feel better, you'll even look better. I'm here to tell you that you'll be a go-getter. Now the way that you shake my hand will tell me how I stand. Now isn't it better to go through life with a smile and a song than walking around with a face 11 miles long? Now you know that you can't go wrong. If you start off each day with a song, you've got to start off each day with a song.
Oh, sing it, Jimmy boy.
Even when things go wrong,
sing it for the hoi polloi.
You'll feel better, you'll even look better. Ah, that music, it does something to me. I wish I knew what it was. Last night I was telling Umbriago about my latest concerto called Tony's Pushcart. He said, Tony's Pushcart, how does it go? I said, it doesn't go, you have to push it. I got a million of them, a million of them. Now you know that you can't go wrong.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
If you start off each day with a song, you've got to start off each day. Boys, please, soft, soft, little more fortissimo. I want to relate a yarn. Turn back the pages of history and what do you see? Madison Square Garden or Odeon. And there I was, interviewing a prize-winning cow. I asked her to tell the radio public how she feels. She said, moo. She's contented, I'm contented, but her husband ain't. So what happens? The bull ups to me, I ups to him, and without any preliminaries, I'm flat on my back. Being a gentleman, I apologized. But the bull's not satisfied, he demands an autopsy. So I grabs him by the tail, and what happens? He flips his tail, I lands on his head. He flips his head, I lands on his tail. He's playing ping pong with me, and I'm losing. Just then the bull is ready to charge again. I gets an idea, I start singing south to the border down Mexico way. And what happens? The bull starts crying. But irregardless, I keeps on singing. This time with the castanets. That's too much for the bull, he collapses. A cheer goes up, I'm saved, and the moral is, you gotta start off each day with a song. You've gotta start off each day with a song.
Oh boy, you're singing now.
Even when things go wrong.
Oh Jimmy, you're a wow.
You feel better. You know, I'm walking down Broadway and who taps me on the shoulder? My pal, hit him in the head, Schwartz. I said, who are you working for now? And he said, the same bunch, the wife and the kids. Now, isn't it better to go through life with a smile and a song than walking around with a face 11 miles long? Now you know that you can't go wrong.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
If you start off each day with a song.
Well, thank you, Jimmy Durante. It is May 7th, and you'd hardly know it by stepping your big toe outside here in New York City. It feels like mid-March. The Ides of March are upon us. I tried to take my morning walk. I got about 2.5 blocks and said, I'll do extra time tomorrow. I think we're never going to have nice weather again. I mean, we may have a day or two, but never more than 2 days in a row. We're being punished for the last 1,000 years of human misbehavior. I think the gods have suddenly said, let's make them miserable. And they've been so successful. Well, the big news this week, of course, was the leak. The Judge Alito leak about the Supreme Court decision. And don't get caught up in what Fox and the New York Post are preoccupied with the leak. Let them spend all their time discussing that. That's a Washington inevitable event that news will get out early because people leak things. And in 2 months and 10 years, there'll be little discussion about who leaked what when. The discussion will be about, and what we have to focus on now, is the prospect that Roe versus Wade will be concluded. And the simple response to that is that unknown young women unknown to me and not knowing it themselves at this particular junction will die because of that decision. Because those of us who lived before Roe versus Wade, we remember the number of backwoods operations that failed and took young women's lives, women who were desperate to have an abortion and died. Because as Betty Ford said, when Roe versus Wade was passed, it's just a matter of getting it out of the backwoods and into a clinic. Someone asked me if I was in favor of abortion. I said, no one, what, that's not the question. Nobody, my favorite line, Scott Blakeman, the comic, said, his wife didn't say to him, what do you want to do Saturday night? Go to a movie or have an abortion? I've known several women who've had abortions, and in very private discussions, their choices were agonizing, and they had to be made. It was economic, it was psychological, it was because they were not able to bring a child into the world at that time. And most of the women were married, so that the purists can't start talking about promiscuity. They were married, and situations made it impossible. So it's... It boggled my mind when I was listening to men on the right. And that was not all the anti-maskers talking about my body, my freedom. Wearing a mask was not some great violation on the body. It was a civic responsibility. It has been a civic responsibility to protect your health and the health of others in case you were carrying the COVID virus. But that they were... could make such an issue out of my body over a mask and be impervious to the agonizing decisions that women have to make. No, I'm not pro-abortion, but I don't have the right to make a decision for a woman unknown to me or even known to me about what she's going to do with her body. And, you know, In 2016, when there was an election between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump, and many of my friends on the far left said they couldn't vote for her for whatever reason. She voted in favor of the war in Iraq 15 years previously. And they couldn't vote for her, so they were going with Jill Stein, later photographed with Putin. Remember that one? The photograph wasn't later. It was revealed. And I and others of my ilk said, the courts, if you don't see a difference between Hillary and Donald Trump, the courts, what will they decide? And it has come to pass. I don't like being right sometimes, but I was right on this. And how empowered does the right feel in taking cases now to the Supreme Court? I started making a list about voting restrictions, interracial marriage, Loewing versus Virginia, affirmative action, gay marriage. And then this story appeared in the Times. I wasn't even prepared for this, but it gives you a hint of what the fallout from Roe versus Wade unto itself is enormous. But here's a story in the Times from Houston, Texas. With the Supreme Court signing a willingness to reverse decades-old precedent like Roe versus Wade on abortion, Governor Greg Abbott of Texas said on Thursday that he would seek to overturn a 1982 court decision that obligated public schools to educate all children, including undocumented immigrants. He wants to use the courts to limit accessibility to be educated. That the state of Texas should not be compelled to educate immigrant children. Where do we stop? Where do we begin? If you are appalled, as I am, by the possibility of Roe versus Wade being ending, what kind of a mind wants to deprive children of an education and will go to court so that they are not legally bound? Can you see what the implications of Roe versus Wade are beyond the fact that hundreds and hundreds of young women will die because they will seek an abortion outside of a clinic that will protect and save them? I have dear friends who are what they call pro-life. I call them pro-egg. And I appreciate their stance, but they have to understand that those of us who call ourselves pro-choice are not impervious to it, but we know that young women, those of us, I remember in college, you had to collect money because Mary Jones, we heard, well, sometimes you weren't given the name, or a dear female friend would come to me and say, do you have a dollar or two? We're collecting money so Mary Jones, or sometimes the name wasn't given, can go to we didn't know where so she could have an abortion. That's what's going to come back in states like Texas and Oklahoma and Alabama and Mississippi, particularly for those women that can't afford to get to New York or New Jersey or California, where the states may make abortion legal. This is the Trump fallout. There's no mistake about it. There's no, there it is. And some of those families and men who are impervious to this will have daughters who will become pregnant. And if they are well healed, the daughter will have a secret. We've all been through that. Those of us in New York know of well-established people with daughters who had the word slipped out, a decision was made so that they could have the life that they wanted, though impregnated at 15 or 16. And there we are, America, 2022. It ain't over, kids. Before we start with the music, let me remind you we're listener-sponsored. We are obligated to raise money. I try and get theater tickets for you, so that you can, while you're supporting us, we can give you an opportunity to take advantage of New York's cultural richness at prices you can afford, or hopefully can afford. One of the things that I've enjoyed, and it started with a musical about a dozen years ago, you know, I can't, because I'm a voter, a drama desk voter, I can't get to see a show until the end of previews or after a show is opening, because people who review, as I do on this program, are not welcome at early previews where they're working on a show. So when I get tickets for previews, I rely on the listeners who let me know. I try to tell them, don't give me the plot. I want to figure that out for myself, but I enjoy the responses. Well, I remember there was a musical, and I've told you this many times, that after the first preview, I got calls the next day. This was pre-emails. And people said, you got to go see this. This is going to go to Broadway. This is terrific. Thank you, David. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. And the show was In the Heights. And it was put together by a man named Lin-Manuel Miranda. And of course, it went to Broadway and it won the Tony Award. So I always listen to you all are, for the most part, pretty good. Some of you disagree with me sometimes. Some listeners disagree with me. You have the right to be wrong. But there are a couple of shows this week in previews. Well, this one, which I told you about last week because it had played for about a week before the pandemic in previews and then was shut down and started previews again this week. And about a dozen people went and the calls were coming. It has to go to Broadway. It's the best thing I've ever seen. It is ba 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 ba. It's called Romeo and Bernadette. It's a new musical. I learned, I didn't even know this, that an old friend of mine, Justin Ross, is directing it. I knew him as a young kid dancing in Broadway musicals. I think he was in the movie Chorus Line. It was in a lot of shows. He's directing Romeo and Bernadette, and apparently It's about Romeo coming from Verona to Brooklyn, falling in love with the daughter of a Don. But I gather the songs and the lyrics and the ba 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 from you all tell me that it's a joy. I can't see it until I think a week from tomorrow. I'm going to see Romeo and Bernadette. But we have tickets this week, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday night at 7, Friday night at 8, a $50 gift to WBAI, and you get a pair of tickets. You email me at dprfortune@hotmail.com. Give you a phone number. It makes my life easier if you give you the address, because I'm going to have to get drill it from you eventually. And then I'll call you over the weekend and we'll get you to see Romeo and Bernadette. Now, I'm probably talking ill-advised at this point, but I've already been told, and you know, in the Rialto, in the theater, word gets around very quickly. I remember once going to a first preview years ago and somebody said, "Have you seen it yet?" And I said, "Well, it's the first preview." And they looked at me. Well, it did try out in San Diego. And another time, well, we went to the out of town try. Before it went out of town what they called the gypsy run through shows. When I worked in the theater, I went to those. Often there was a musical or a play. I saw The Lunch that way in The Visit before they began their Boston, New Haven pre-Broadway tour. I saw The Visit on an empty stage with The Lunch. I was invited because friends of the producers came to see them. But I have been told that there's already Broadway, you know, when there's an empty theater on Broadway, the theater owners start, the Schuberts, the Niederlanders, Joe Jansen, they want to fill it up. And they start sniffing around. And the word is, just a word, that Romeo and Bernadette, which has only played 5 previews, is already being looked at. You have a chance to see it this week. We'll start. Our music is, her name is Barbara Streisand. She did a concert at the Barclays Center. Great concert. We're going to play from that. But I hope that you take advantage of Romeo and Bernadette as those years ago did for In the Heights, and were able to say, "I saw it first." dprfortune@hotmail.com. Barbara Streisand, Cole Porter, together again.
It might have taken me 33 years, but I did finally come back here, right? And you are a swell audience. As a matter of fact, you're the top, you're the silken satin, you're the top. You can keep Manhattan. Give me Bedford Stuy and a cool rap by Jay-Z. You're a Maharaja, a Brooklyn Dodger, your family. You are the art in an old museum. You're the taste. A cold egg crayon. You're a Brooklyn net on a private jet nonstop. Come on, baby, there's the Navy. You're the top. You're the town that begat Judge Judy, Lena Horne. Of course, yours truly. You are Danny Kaye and Houdini and Mae West. You are Cracker Jacks like the great Colfax. Baby, you're the best. You are the shine on Liz Taylor's rings. You're the crown. trolley. You're the top, now my favorite. You are a hot bialy. Talking Brooklynese, saying D's and D's and D's. You're a Rolls Royce dealer, a wonder wheel in your vintage clothes. You're at the top, Brighton Beach boardwalker. You're the top. You are a real straight talker. And you know it's true, it's an accent you can't draw. Hey there, Brooklyn, you're good looking. I smell Chinese food a cooking. I'm so glad I took this bucket. Oh, you are the top.
Well, clearly those were not Cole Porter's lyrics. Barbara went back to Brooklyn at the Barclay Center, and those special lyrics were written by Charles Midnight and Jay Lancers with a little adaptation on Cole Porter's You're the Tops. Barbara's homage to Brooklyn. She talked about how great she was to be back there. I bet she wouldn't give up her Central Park West apartment for a place in Crown Heights for $1 million. She was happy to be back, and I'm sure the limo was waiting for her to get back to Manhattan. I'm only presuming. But, you know, she lives pretty well out in Hollywood most of the time. Tomorrow's Mother's Day. I'm going to celebrate it in the morning, going to the Ethical Culture Society at 2 West 64th Street to hear Barbara Allen speak. My friend Barbara is the founder and the pulse beat of Prison Families Anonymous. Barbara, many, many years ago, found herself in a situation. Many women do, that an important man in her life was facing imprisonment. In this case, it was her husband, a school teacher in Nassau County with no knowledge of the criminal justice system. She learned by experience how to navigate visiting hours, the courts, dealing with the rules as they change from institution to institution. And along the way, she started a group called Prison Families Anonymous and has been the inspiration, the soul sister for so many families, mostly women, because it's the women that respond to their loved ones that are incarcerated. And she's written a book and called Doing Time on the Outside. She's been a guest on this program. She is my dear friend, but also an inspiration to me and to so many others. And if you want to join Barbara tomorrow at Ethical Culture Society, 11 o'clock, 2 West 64th Street, and you cannot get there because of all sorts of things going on Mother's Day in the rain, you can check in on Zoom. All you do is go to ethical.nyc and then find tomorrow's program. And you can Zoom in to see this very special woman share her experiences and how she has been embraced and embraced so many other families. One other announcement. Next week, my guest will be Carolyn Warmus and two attorneys. Carolyn Warmus has been out of prison for 3 years. She was one of the most famous criminal cases of the 90s because the murder took place 2 years after the movie Fatal Attraction took place. And it was Carolyn was tried. There was a hung jury, tried again, convicted. With lots of doubts. And the headlines were all over the place because it was called the Fatal Attraction case. The three people involved were the man with whom she was having a relationship and his wife who was killed. Carolyn maintained her innocence, has fought for it. DNA has been discovered or made available and all sorts of other things. And the very interesting thing is that one of her lawyers, Jeff Deskovit, is a young man also from Westchester who was tortured into confessing, was tried and convicted of rape and murder of a classmate, another teenager, did 16 years in prison before the Innocence Project got on the case. The DNA revealed that another man who was already doing time for a subsequent similar case was the real murderer. And Jeff Deskovit got out of prison, a free man. Although, as he has told me that, you know, even though everything proves that he did not do it, there is still a stigma because you've done time. But with the money that Jeff won in a lawsuit against Westchester County, he used that money to go to college and then to law school. And now he's working on cases for people he feels have been unjustly convicted. And he's one of the two lawyers who will be on the program next week with Carolyn Wamis, the Fatal Attraction case, which was headlined and will be headlined when she goes into court again. And Daniel Kelly, the second attorney. I've met with them and talked with them, and their insight and what they have to reveal will be fascinating to you, as it was to me. We have tickets for another show for which you, the listeners, have responded to me. As I mentioned, the musical Romeo and Bernadette, just unanimously, almost everybody who went to see it this week has contacted me and said, it's special, it's wonderful. The response to Wedding Band at the Polanski Center in Brooklyn, this is an Alice Childress play that was done in 1972 with Ruby Dee, never revived in New York since, about an interracial marriage. Interesting, considering everything with the Supreme Court now. Took place, the marriage took place in 1918, a black woman and a white man. And the emails that I've gotten are almost philosophical and biblical about the emotional involvement that as audience members, people have had with this play, Wedding Band. A couple of people contacted me who are involved in interracial relationships and said how, I can't duplicate their emotions. One person I spoke to on the phone, it was almost cathartic, saying that the things that you can, the inner thoughts that you think are so exclusively yours could be revealed on stage, and that you see your feelings, your emotions, your fears, your passions revealed. I think that's why I love the theater. It gets, unlike the movies and television, they are live right there for you. They are human beings. I love movies. I'm a movie freak. I love watching movies. Movies saved my life as a child. But the theater, it's very special. Anyway, Wedding Band is at the stunning Pulaski Shakespeare Center on Ashland Avenue in faraway Brooklyn. Just joking, Brooklynites. I think it's the most beautiful theater in New York. And we have tickets for Wedding Band this week, a $50 gift to BAI, Tuesday through Saturday night, every night at 7:30. $50 for a pair of tickets. You email me at dprfortune@hotmail.com. Give your phone number. It helps me if you give your address, and we'll get you there. So we have two shows so far for you to see, both which have gotten favorable reviews, not from the critics and not from me, but from BAI folks, the most sophisticated radio audience in America. Here's the wonderful King Pleasure. Then I'll do my little essay called Out on a Limb.
Go and throw your troubles away in the deep blue sea. Hurry on back, start jumping with me. Let's jump, jump until they put out the lights and jump. I think you'll agree the music is as groovy as it used to be. Troubles go double, so throw away your troubles and come with me. Wait until we get on the floor, then jump, jump, jump till you can't no more. Baby, now jump. Turn a loose and wiggle with a wobble and a giggle, pretty baby. Tell me, do you want to dab or do you want to jump? I don't care about what the people do or what people say. We're only here for a day. Well, I only know the main thing is give a lot of living. So go on, swing it, pretty baby. Jump with a rubbery-dubbery feeling. Jump till you're really rocking and reeling. Jump till you're spinning all around. Then pull your body down on the round, around, on the ground. You may be swinging. Come on and jump with me, little birdie one. Come on, jump up and down. Jump, baby, and stomp. Don't stop swinging those hips around me. Jump till you really get the feeling over there. Then be happy, baby, while you be. Swing, come on and swing. Don't mean a thing if it ain't got that swing. Just jump, jump until you feel it in the romp. Jump until you're leaping up high. Well, you better reach and get it, for you'll never take it with you. Not when you die. Oh. Shake that thing. So go ahead and wiggle, pretty baby, and romp. So pretty to the eye. So go ahead and jimmy, pretty baby, and jump. Spread wings, jump, jump, spread wings, jump, spread your wings, jump, jump, spread wings, jump, jump, spread your wings, jump, jump, spread your wings, and jump. Makes you feel so good, like I knew it would. You gotta keep swinging, pretty baby, jump, and make up your mind to reach the summit. Jump and give it an easy stride and jump and give it a greasy slide and jump. Baby, won't you boogie it wide and jump? Jump until you raise up and glide and jump. Jump until you shake a loose and break a loose. Slide along and glide along. Oh, well, oh, Bill Bailey, please tell my friends I'm coming over the top. Well, I hate to go and leave you, but I tell you it's all over now, pretty baby. Baby, it was fun. Yes, it was. Oh, yes, it was fun. Well, I'm glad I met you. And I never will forget you and the way you dance. I'll never forget you, cause I love you, pretty baby, and I love the way you dance.
Well, that's King Pleasure, and I'm David Rothenberg, and the program is any Saturday on listener-sponsored WBAI 99.5 FM in the Big Apple. An essay, Out on a Limb. Ever since Trump's political ambition inflicted itself on us, I've been citing and reminding people of William Shire's The Rise and Fall of the Third Reich. Much is to be learned from that tome. Not that every fascist movement duplicates its predecessors, but there are patterns that are evident. Mr. Shire's historic record is a frightening recollection of what was and a clarion call of what could be. Like most of us who crave for the concept of democracy, to live in a democracy, I hope that Trump's 2020 defeat, losing by 7 million votes to President Biden, would put an end to the orange-headed monster's assault on our evolving government. With all of our historic shortcomings, we have a constitution and a bill of rights on which to build. Trump did not concede. He has yet to acknowledge the loss. He has made a career of challenging outcomes in Georgia, Arizona, and Pennsylvania, making enemies of Republican leaders in those states who have insisted on the integrity of the progress of the process. Compare Trump's response to Al Gore in 2000, where Trump lost by 7 million votes, Gore won by 500,000. The outcome between him and George Bush was determined by questionable ballots in Florida. But rather than the nation being split and stymied, Al Gore conceded. And some of us were not thrilled with that. But he opted for the nation over ego. Trump, who has challenged every election result, including his reality show being bypassed for an Emmy, has emerged as graceless, a sure enough loser who can't accept the verdict, and along the way is content to divide our country in pursuit of a presidency, which when he had for 4 years was abysmal on the job, a disaster, pathetic in his ineptness, dangerous, his failure to see COVID as anything other than an impediment on his reelection. And I suspect history will record him as responsible for thousands of deaths as a result of his policy. And then January 6 arrived, a carnival of malcontents. And it was nothing if not a reminder of the Nazis' burning of the Reichstag, which played a pivotal role in Hitler's rise to power. And Trump's obsequious acolytes should be tutored that Hitler's rise was followed by Hitler's fall and the devastation of his country. Took Germany decades to recuperate from Hitler. There has been a refusal or a fear of Trump for his political cronies to focus. They've just been frightened to focus on that date, January 6th. Trump inspired thugs, insurrectionists, smashed windows, and tried to enter our Capitol. They let out threatening cries, wanting to kill the vice president, Mike Pence, who was allowing the Electoral College to proceed. January 6th was right out of Joseph Goebbels' Nazi plan book, and still too many Republicans refuse to acknowledge an incendiary mob invasion of our Capitol building. In fact, the small handful of elected Republicans who have questioned the failed insurrection have been ostracized by the GOP. It is now Trump's party. Robert Taft, Dwight Eisenhower, and Ronald Reagan would not be invited in. How has Trump been able to consolidate power and divide the nation, even in defeat? Here's a clue. Early in his candidacy for the Republican nomination in 2016, he ridiculed and he sneered Marco Rubio, Jeb Bush, Ted Cruz, Lindsey Graham, all of his opponents, among others. And he introduced and institutionalized the notion of fake news. He neutralized opposition. Worse, he made enemies of the responsible press. If a democracy crumbles, it begins when people in power are not held accountable. That was the heart of the Trump strategy. It was the perfect storm for a fascist to rise, with increasing reliance on new technological news blasts, Facebook, Twitter, and an avalanche of blogs and podcasts, with little or no fact-checking or accountability, lies and self-serving lies exploded on America, while the credibility of the New York Times, the Washington Post, and CNN was being mocked by Trump. Fake news, he twittered during his morning bowel movements. Only media fawning mattered. It's called Fox and Hannity. One third of the nation seems convinced that January 6th thugs were saving the election from a false verdict, ignoring the reality that Joe Biden defeated Donnie by, how many times do I have to say it? 7 million votes. It wasn't close. The big lie was Hitler's ace in the hole, which led to scapegoating, fear of the other. The Jews were his initial target, but the list widened. Trump's anti-immigration tirades follows a similar pattern. Define the threat, create a fear, and then and act with impunity against the threats. Hitler's final solution was gassing Jews. It was the final solution, preceded by baby steps. Trump's wall was to protect us against brown-skinned Central Americans who he defined as rapists and murderers. The first, not the final solution. It's not over. Trump's allies are rearranging voting laws in key states, and the next election will be brutal because the battle will be about who's being allowed to vote. Many of us grew up when the nation or when this nation or acts of patriotism was defined by voting. Not so anymore. I've even heard voices suggesting that too many of the wrong people are determining election outcomes. The wrong people. Trump is not traveling alone on this path. Governors DeSantis in Florida and Abbott in Texas, among others, are two of his most obtrusive companions on the yellow brick road. There are dozens in Congress like Ted Cruz and Josh Hawley, Tom Cotton, Marjorie Taylor Greene, and many, many more, including the pathetic Lindsey Graham, who has become the poster boy of political U-turns, all ready to sell out their country to be on the side of a power-hungry social misfit. We've got work to do. Trump remains a danger, a threat to democracy, because he has managed to make fascism attractive to too many Americans. I'm David Rothenberg, out on a limb. Here's Diane Carroll from the Broadway musical by Richard Rodgers, No Strings.
The sweetest sounds I'll ever hear are still inside my head. The kindest words I'll ever know are waiting to be said. The most entrancing sight of all is yet for me to see.
Songs I'll ever hear are still inside my head. The kindest words I'll ever know are waiting to be said. The most entrancing sight of all is yet for me to see, and the dearest love in all the world is waiting somewhere for me, is waiting somewhere, somewhere for me.
Somewhere for me.
yet
for me to see, and the dearest love in all the world
is waiting somewhere for me.
Waiting somewhere.
Is waiting somewhere, somewhere for me.
That's Richard Kiley with Diane Carroll from Richard Rogers' No Strings. I had the pleasure of working on that up until its opening. Then I moved to another office, but I had great opportunity to work with Diane Carroll during before they went into rehearsal. I had a wonderful day with her when she went to Henri Bendel with clothes designer Donald Brooks. Have I told you this story before? Well, you know, I only have so many stories in my life. I went with Diane Carroll because she was trying on outfits that Donald Brooks was preparing for her to wear in No Strings. And we had just met a couple of weeks prior, and I found her bright, and she was young and fresh, and not fresh, sassy, fresh, new. And she said, David, how does this outfit look? And I said, Diane, I am not a fashion maven. And she said, that's why I want your opinion. I'm getting old. You're the guy on the street. Do you like this? I thought that was kind of cool that she was, she wanted my opinion on her outfit. Needless to say, everything she put on, she looked gorgeous. All right. I was just talking, my essay was about Donald Trump. And then I read this in the paper this morning. Because I was wondering, what if Trump had been reelected? What would his response have been to the genius, how we describe Putin, to the invasion of Ukraine? Would we have been partners with Putin? So this story today in the news, former Defense Secretary Mark Esper, who said that former President Donald Trump considered, and Esper was Trump's chosen Secretary of Defense, said that former President Donald Trump considered firing missiles at suspected drug cartel sites in Mexico, and that hardline White House aide Stephen Miller wanted to send 250,000 troops to the southern border. Shoot missiles into Mexico to destroy the drug labs, Esper recalls Trump telling him. They don't have control of their own country. When Esper objected to the idea of a military attack on one of the closest U.S. allies, Trump suggested trying to keep the U.S. role in the attack secret. We could shoot some Patriot missiles and take out the labs quietly. Trump apparently unaware that Patriot missiles are defensive weapons used to shoot down incoming missiles. No one would know it was us. The bizarre exchange is the leading shocking revelation about Trump's behavior and Esper's forthcoming memoir, A Sacred Oath. Ay, 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 ay. And politically, his chosen candidate, J.D. Vance, won the Republican nomination in Ohio. Vance, who was an anti-Trumper, said in 2016, said he was closest we had to a fascist, suddenly did a Lindsey Graham and won the endorsement of Donnie and has been in the nominee. He wrote a book called Hillbilly Elegy. It was a bestseller, widely praised. I didn't like it. I said so on the air. Doesn't make it. I don't know if that's connected. I just wanted to get that in. It's serious. You know, the GOP can control the 2024 elections because governors and state can dictate where there's voting booths and what's. And you remember there was this one area. I don't even remember what state it was. It was in a black area, and they moved the voting booth from the center of town to some outlying post where you can only get there by car. There were no buses. And instead of going downtown where many people had access, they made it difficult for voters, mostly African-American voters. It's what can be done. And that's where we are, folks. The politics of today in America. Sometimes I feel like I'm in Berlin in 1936. Here's a review of two plays, one for which we have theater tickets. I saw two theatrical productions this week back to back, sharing a similar antagonist. The musical Harmony at the National Yiddish Theater in Battery Park and Hitler's Tasters on Theater Row, both set in Germany at different years during the rise and the reign of Hitler, and both Nazis hovering in the vicinity. It was interesting to note that in Michelle Colas Brooks' Hitler Tasters, she, by the way, was a guest with us a few weeks back. In her play, Hitler's Tasters, the Nazis were always outside the door, ominous but unseen. The robust musical Harmony, with music by Barry Manilow and book and lyrics by Bruce Sussman, followed the rise of a singing sextet that included three Jews. As their fame spread through, Germany was going through a political upheaval, and nationalistic soldiers began to intrude and challenge the upward spiral. The fear of the rising Nazis in the play Harmony was intense until they revealed themselves. They looked like cutouts from a World War II movie. The theatrical lesson that I learned from this is that the unknown had a greater dramatic payoff than actors parading about the stage with a swastika armbands. Harmony is an engaging historical musical, intriguing as the talented cast belts out Mr. Manilow's score, yet they maneuver to avert the Nazi claws. The tension is at its peak before the arrival of German soldiers. At that juncture, Harmony slides into melodrama. The young women in Hitler's Tasters are confined in a room, sentenced for unknown reasons to taste the Führer's food before his totalitarian lips meet a morsel. Simultaneously, they fear being poisoned, and the continuous sound of Nazi officials outside the room, the voices of men we never see. The post-pubescent lasses chatter about boys and sex and Hollywood movies, but the unknown is always about and around. The absence of Nazis is chilling. It reminded me of Anne Frank, Up in the Attic, the play, the movie. You didn't see the Nazis, you saw the confinement. Both plays have a strong premise, but Hitler's Tasters is more successful in achieving the author's intent. Director Sarah Norris's inventive staging follows the single storyline, and the gifted cast of four exposes the playwright's irony and dark humor. Playwright Brooks is clearly concerned as much for America's future as she is with Germany's past. Harmony almost achieves a solidified base. The music and the cast are strong, and Warren Carlyle's staging is firm. The eponymous musical group Harmony was an international favorite starting in the late 20s, and the story is there, but the power is diffused by the melodrama when the real drama loses its focus. Less indeed can be more. That's Hitler's, the strength of Hitler's Tasters. And it's at this point I tell you that we have tickets for Hitler's Tasters this week. After seeing it, I said, more. Can we have more for the BAI listeners? So we have them all this week. Well, not all this week. Thursday and Friday night, Saturday and Sunday matinee, and Saturday night. $50 for a pair of tickets to see Hitler's Tasters. It's on Theater Row. It's a fascinating, unique theater experience in this small theater where you're confined in it. You feel the tension and the humor and the strange innocence of these young girls. It's Hitler's Tasters. If you want to see it and support BAI, it's a $50 gift to us for two tickets. Email me at dprfortune@hotmail.com. And Here's Louis Prima with one of the musical explosions that made him Louis Prima.
Banana split for my baby, a glass of plain water for me. Banana split for my baby, a glass of plain water for me. Dispenser man, if you please, serve my chick a mess of calories. Banana split for my baby, a glass of plain water for me. Flip back the lid, scoop anything in sight, make it a rainbow of red, brown, and white. Chocolate chip and everything that's nice, tutti frutti once and spumoni twice. Banana split for my baby, and a glass of plain water for me. Spray the whipped cream for at least an hour, pile it as high as the Eiffel Tower. Loaded with nuts, about 16 ton. Top it with a pizza, just for fun. Banana split for my baby, and a glass of plain water for me.
Banana split for my baby, a glass of plain water for me. Banana split for my baby, a glass of plain water for me. Stack her up with crazy goo,
'cause that's the stuff she likes to wade right through.
Banana split for my baby,
a glass of plain water for me. Now add the cherries, the kind she loves to munch. Skip one banana, use the whole darn bunch. Drown it in fudge, six or seven cans. Give her two spoons, she'll eat it with both hands. Banana split for my baby, and a glass of plain water for me. Separate checks, it must be. Charge the split to her, the water to me. Oh, the banana splits for my baby, and the glass of plain water's for me. Ain't got no money, the glass of plain water's for me.
I don't want to belabor the point, but I got two more emails from listeners as I was talking about the shows that we're offering. And I kept saying, and I was telling you how enthused people were for Romeo and Bernadette. Here's two more. Romeo and Bernadette, this is from George. Romeo and Bernadette is one of the greatest performances I've ever seen. I can't even put it into words how incredible it was. The show brings new life to the Italian art songs that are totally unimaginable. And then here's one from Joe. David, I wrote the following to a friend after seeing Romeo and Bernadette on Thursday night. He writes, last night I went to see an off-Broadway musical called Romeo and Bernadette. Do you remember when Julian Marsh said in 42nd Street, when Peggy Sawyer said she was going to quit the show before opening night and go back to Allentown? He said, I say to you, musical comedy, the two most beautiful words in the English language, and you say Allentown. Allentown. It isn't often that I see a show that and immediately want to go back and see it again. Well, this is it, Romeo and Bernadette. This is musical comedy. Jesus, ain't that something? We have tickets this week. No matinees. Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. Romeo and Bernadette. $50 for a pair. DPRFortune@hotmail.com. What else? Well, I have another review for you. Nothing but it's all show business today, and show business and Trump. Jacquel Spivey is my new favorite star on Broadway. I just read that he just got a Theatre World best, one of the 10 best new performers of the year. Jacques Spivey is my new favorite star on Broadway, making his musical comedy debut as auspicious as any in recent memory. He's the centerpiece in Michael R. Jackson's audacious and challenging musical, A Strange Loop, at the Lyceum Theater. Mr. Spivey's character is self-described. He says, I am a fat black homosexual. What we also discover is that he sings like a Broadway veteran, his mellow voice filling the house. And with Michael Jackson's words, he has rapier wit, alternatingly charming and enraged. Mr. Jackson, who wrote the book Music and Lyrics, is more than talented. He's a social commentator, determined to make us uncomfortable with his sexual explicitness. He takes us on a musical journey where none dared travel before. His tale is shocking only if your private thoughts have never been set on stage. The playbill tells us that the lead actor, Jacquel Spivey, is a recent graduate of Point Park College. What it fails to say is that he is a once-in-a-generation, unlikely Broadway star, musically superb with a droll and polished delivery. In an instant, he can allow you to roar with laughter and end up with a tear in your eye. A strange loop leaves little unsaid. Brutally honest, it sweeps along like a theatrical tsunami. Stephen Brackett's staging is impeccable, imaginative, and attentive to the creative fury of Mr. Jackson. Raja Feathers Kelly's choreography subtly weaves in and out of this tale. All aspects of the production are fine-tuned. Mr. Spivey, while the center of all that happens in a strange loop, is amidst a company that is faultless. The performances are all bold. A strange loop is like nothing you've ever seen on Broadway, and Mr. Spivey and Mr. Jackson bring major talents to the theatrical scene. I sadly tell you we have no tickets for it. You're on your own with it, but I think A Strange Loop is quite an experience, and I call it to your attention. We do have tickets, though, for Belfast Girls coming to one of my favorite companies, the Irish Repertory Theatre in Chelsea. I love Irish theatre. I love St. John. I love O'Casey, and I, you know, Dancing at Luna. So those are, you know, those are, that's the theatre that it enriches me. Well, Belfast Girls is having its American debut. It's about a group of women from Belfast who are leaving the country. They want to become mistresses of their own destiny, but some find they can't escape the nightmare of the lives they're leaving behind. It's Belfast Girls. They're going to a new world, but they can't leave their old. And it's a part of them. I understand that you can't, sometimes you can't shake all of that. I can't wait to see Belfast Girls because I love everything that I go to see. Well, not everything, but almost everything that I see at the Irish Rep. We have tickets for you Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday night this week to see Belfast Girls. $50 for a pair of tickets if you email me at dprfortune@hotmail.com. If you just tuned in, earlier we announced tickets for Romeo and Bernadette, a new musical in previews at the Theater 555 on West 42nd Street, in which BAI listeners have been sending raves. Similar reaction to a revival of Alice Childress's play Wedding Band, which played in 1972 at the Public with Ruby Dee, has not been seen since. The comments from those BAIers who have seen it this week have been, well, emotionally haunt. You know, it sounded like more than a theater experience to some people. It was an emotional experience. And we have Wedding Band tickets all this week, Tuesday through Saturday night. No matinees for that. It's at the Pulaski Shakespeare Center on Ashland Avenue in the People's Republic of Brooklyn. So let's have some salute. If you want to support us, go to the theater. Boy, I can't imagine a better collection of shows. I can't wait to see Romeo and Bernadette and Wedding Band when they finally let me go in, because I review, I have to wait until they allow critics to come in. But let's celebrate this month. Let's hope this month gets better. But Julie Andrews, when she was in Camelot, had wonderful things to say about May. And all right, Julie, maybe you have the right idea. Let's hear it.
Tra-la, it's May the lusty month of May, that lovely month when everyone goes blissfully astray. Tra-la, it's here, that shocking time of year, when tons of wicked little thoughts merrily appear. It's May, that gorgeous holiday, when every maiden prays that her lad will be a cad. It's mad, it's gay, a libelous display, those dreary vows that everyone takes, everyone breaks, everyone makes divine mistakes, the nasty months of May. Whence this fragrance wafting through the air? What sweet feelings does its scent transmute? Whence this perfume floating everywhere? Don't you know it's that dear forbidden fruit? Tra-la-la-la-la, that dear forbidden fruit. Tra-la-la-la-la. Thing or two, and try to make each precious day one you'll always rue. It's May, the month of yes you may, the time for every frivolous whim, proper or im. It's wild, it's gay, a blot in every way. The birds and bees with all of their vast amorous past gaze at the human race aghast. When all the world is brimming with fun, wholesome or un, it's mad, it's gay, a libelous display. Those dreary balls that everyone takes, everyone breaks to buy the stage.
Well, well done, Julie. Let's hope that May finally discovers itself and that we have some decent weather coming along. I have another theater review. No, first I want to tell you about this. There's a full-page ad in the Times tomorrow for the musical Americano. I'm finally going to see that tomorrow matinee. You may recall that we had Tony Valdovinos on. He is not in Americano. He is the subject for it. He was the young man, a Mexican-American, who wanted to enlist in the United States Marines after 9/11 and was denied because he discovered he did not know he was not a citizen, and he became an activist for the Dreamers and outspoken and effective, and was approached by some theater people and said, we want to do a show about you. And the result is Americano, which many of you have seen and also have alerted me that it's something that I must see, and I finally will tomorrow. But he has a full-page ad in the Arts and Leisure section tomorrow. It's beautiful. It's a letter. Dear America, you're the only country I've ever known and loved. Yes, when I went to enlist in the Marines on my 18th birthday, inspired by the events of 9/11, you said no. I was devastated. Everything I dreamed of was gone. My name is Antonio Valdovinos, brought here by my parents from Colima, Mexico, when I was 2 years old. I am one of you in every sense. That's why I wanted to put my life on the line for you. My parents never told me I was undocumented. I had to learn it through a Marine recruiter on the day of my greatest wish. My dream was crushed. I learned that I am a dreamer, like some 1.9 million other young people in purgatory. We live in legal limbo, in fear on a razor's edge. I want you to understand me, us, more because we love you. It's why, no matter how difficult it is to watch, I've allowed my story to be told in the new musical, Americano. My people have been shouting at you. Perhaps you will listen better now in song. I hope you find Americano to be educational as it is engaging and entertaining, for this is a civil rights fight of the time, just as those who stood before us from Selma to Stonewall to the San Joaquin Valley. I will never be a Marine, but by putting down the gun and picking up a pen, I can be found on the front lines of a different kind of fight for equality and justice. We are your students, your doctors, nurses, first responders, and other essential workers, yet we are not citizens of the country so many of us defend daily. Art has changed America in countless ways before. I hope my story will help to do so now, because this is my home. Tony Valdovinos. Boy, you know, when he says that art, what art can do, as you know, the play I produced, Fortune in Men's Eyes, led to the creation of the Fortune Society. An untold amount of lives have been altered because of the work of the Fortune Society. And here, Tony, a dreamer, the subject of a musical, invites you to get on board. The quote from the paper says, as urgent as it is entertaining, the New York Times. We have tickets for Americano all this week, Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday night, Saturday and Sunday matinee, and Saturday night. $50 for a pair of tickets. Email me at dprfortune@hotmail.com. Did you watch the Mets score 7 runs against Philadelphia in the 9th inning the other night? The amazing Mets, they're back. It's exciting. The Mets and the Yankees are in first place. You know that I spend my evenings with the basketball, with the NBA playoffs and the baseball. Whoever invented the remote, once I finally figured it out, has enriched my life because I can watch Golden State versus Memphis, and in a second, watch the Mets versus Philadelphia in baseball. And that's how I get through the day after reading about the Ukraine and Trump and climate change and the pandemic. You have to find ways of survival. I do want to say this, though. Watching the Met game the other night, ESPN was covering a game, and they mic'd one of the players, Francisco Lindor. He was mic'd during the game. I object to that. The player should be concentrating on the game. He doesn't have to be part of ESPN's senseless and endless attempt to get innocuous comments from the participants. You have enough time between and half times and after and before games to get the predictable comments. Do you have to take them away from the concentration on their game? He's playing in the infield for the Mets. He doesn't need to comment on what's going on around him. And what's interesting is that the commentators are not commentating on the game. They're talking about contracts and what happened 14 years ago. They should be commenting on the game. What else gets you upset, David? Let me make a list of the 10 things that get me most angry. ESPN, Donald Trump. Yeah, that's it's all there. Here's a play review. POTUS is a feminist farce evoking shrieks of laughter at the Schubert Theater. Molière would approve of POTUS, and which is an often hysterically funny new play taking place in the back rooms of 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. It's an all-woman's gathering. No man would ever dare, but playwright Selena Fillinger dared, and the exceedingly talented and much awarded Susan Stroman has staged POTUS at Amtrak speed. And then there's Julie White giving a comedy performance for the ages, portraying the smart one behind the president of the United States, not his wife. That's the assignment for the stylish Vanessa Williams. All of the women are working one way or another around the White House. Their behind-the-scenes chatter might have prompted my mother to wash out everyone's mouth with soap, with a bar of soap. The first act, potty mouths and all, is nonstop laughter. Miss White, as Julie White, as the chief of staff, opens the play at high voltage. In French farce, you may recall, they race through doors opening and slamming. Here in Miss Stroman has Beowulf Borat's well-appointed rotating White House rooms serve the same purpose. They're spinning around, running until exhausted. Things get a little congested after the intermission. The pace more frenetic than funny, but there's still enough laughs to keep the audience breathless. POTUS, President of the United States, in case you didn't know the initials, POTUS probably wouldn't play well in Peoria, but we're in New York. And comedies like this are part of the reason we're here and not in Peoria. If I could watch Julie White and Susie Nakamura's opening scene every night, I'd be able to forget Putin, pandemics, and Judge Alito. I would just be laughing. And that's my review. Well, who do we have now on deck? I guess it's Betty White and Hello Seal. Here's one of Betty White's Hello Seal. I play this from time to time, and I'll tell you how you can get the whole CD and have a laugh or two. Betty White, Hello Seal.
Hello. Seal? No, what are you interrupting? No, I'm putting one kid to bed for the night. The other one's still eating lunch. Yeah, hold on one second. Hold on. Let me get something in her. Marilyn, make a hum, hum, hum. Empty and fill. Hold on, Phil. She's testing me. Hold on. Marilyn, you're going to sit here, sweetheart, and you're going to eat this lunch if it takes us till 4 o'clock in the morning. And after lunch, you're going to eat supper. Make a hum, hum, hum. Go ahead. Taste it. It's delicious. Go ahead. Take another spoon. It's delicious. Yeah. Sam? I don't know how she eats it. I can't even look at it. Yeah, listen, what I want to ask you... Hold on one second. Hold on. The other one just got out of bed. Chickie? Chickie? What are you doing out of bed? Hold on, Sam. Mother put you to bed 3 hours ago. Why aren't you sleeping? What do you mean you feel insecure? If mother smacks you, will you feel more secure? Now get into bed. Mother loves you. I said mother loves you. Get into bed. Good night with love. I said good night with love. Say good night to mother with love. Say good night, mother. I love you. Say good night to mother. Get into bed. I should say you're looking at me. Say you're mad. Yeah. Is she mad? Yeah. She looks just like his sister now. Marilyn! Marilyn! Wake up and eat! I said, wake up and eat! Well, she fell asleep on me with the lamp chuck hanging out of her mouth. Yeah, listen, Sam. I want to call you back. No, I better put her to bed with the lamp chuck. Yeah. I'll call you back.
Betty Walker's Hello Seal, and it's one of 9 sketches on this one CD, and we make them available for you if you would like a copy, and $30 to WBAI, and we'll send it to you. So if you are so inclined, you can email me at dprfortune@hotmail.com, ask for a copy of Betty Walker's Hello, Seal. If you need some laughter in your life, or if you have a friend who's housebound who could enjoy a laugh or two, or even not housebound, go ahead, send me an email and we'll get you that. The Los Angeles Dance Company had a great review in the Times this week. We just have a couple of pair of tickets this week, Tuesday night and Wednesday night. If you want to go to the Joyce Theater, the dance capital of the world, $50 for a pair of tickets. All women choreographers. That's not a breakthrough. Women choreographers, you know, in the arts, the women were there before any other field. Agnes DeMille, Luna White, Danya Krupska, Martha Graham. They may have had a struggle, but way before women were making inroads in other fields, in the arts, as producers, and certainly as actresses, they had a voice. But here in classical choreography, the Los Angeles Dance Company, at the Joyce, we have tickets for Tuesday or Wednesday night. So let me know if you're so inclined. dprfortune@hotmail.com. Daily News sports columnist Mike Lupica continues as one of a handful of writers propelling the many characters created by crime fiction master Robert B. Parker. It's now a literary cottage industry. Robert B. Parker's Revenge Tour, published by Putnam, is Lupica's fourth book in the Sonny Rollins series, one of Parker's last protagonists and first female gumshoe. It adds to the challenge for Luca, first finding Parker's unique meter, recognized by his loyal followers. Lupica has succeeded fairly well in that area, but with Sonny as a protagonist, he has to locate the voice of a woman detective, as created by Parker. That alone could make him a panelist or a topic for the women on The View, because they've had discussions. Can white people write about black people? Can black people write about white people? Can a man write about a woman? Tell that to Flaubert and Tolstoy. Can a woman write about a man? They argue whether they can find the right voice may be discussed, but do they have the right to? I think that any man, Tolstoy can write about Anna Karenina if it's not an accurate portrait. And if women don't find it accurate, that's for them to say so. But I certainly think that anybody who wants to write can write about another person, even if they're not of their gender or religion or skin color. It's and then you can argue with them. You know, Margaret Mitchell wrote Gone with the Wind. Was her portrait of Scarlett O'Hara accurate? Probably more accurate than her portrait of Mammy, played by Hattie McDaniel. But did Mammy exist in the plantation days? I don't know. That's a panel discussion. Anyway, let's on with this book review. With all that, Revenge Tour is a good mystery writing, a Boston story with Sonny called upon to represent an egocentric best-selling author, a woman whose goal exceeds her talent. Melanie Joan Hall needs Sonny to determine and eliminate the folks that are threatening her. It's a carnival ride with murders, many suspects, colorful characters, and cameo appearances from other Parker books. I found it a breezy read, engaging, and an intriguing puzzle. Mike Lupica is doing well by Mr. Parker, and the Revenge Tour could be cited as evidence of that claim. So, let's have some music. Raul Julia from Nine, beautiful score. Maury Yessen wrote the book and lyrics based on Fellini's Eight and a Half. They made the musical Nine. Raul Julia standing in for the character based on Fellini. And then I'm going to read a story I wrote. Here's Raul Julia.
Just me is so easy to be when I'm only with you. Open inside and with nothing to hide,
from your view. Seems long ago I was destined to know, and the moment I saw you I knew I could be totally happy with no one but you. Passionate night after passionate night, I give over to you. Utterly changed, I'm at each prearranged rendezvous. Lured by the fire of your endless desire, I still wonder the way that it grew. Never elusive, it comes from exclusively you. Finding a special person we can love is so rare. How in the world can there be two? Send me a love that will mend me with love. I am desperate for you. Giving you chase like some goddess of grace, I pursue. Blinded by need, I will follow your lead. Monkey see, monkey say, monkey do. Taken for granted, completely enchanted by you. Small wonder it seems that my life's made of dreams and of wishes that never come true. I wouldn't be lonely if I could be only with you. And you, and you.
Beautiful, just beautiful. Raul Julia from Nine. And folks, when you email me for tickets, please, your phone number so I can call you back. It's going to be tough for me to read this story, but I will try. I got permission from relatives to read it last night. You know, during the early days of the pandemic, when we were all housebound, I wrote a lot of short stories. Essays, if you will, but was told that there was no market for them. And so I created a series called Stories for Which There Is No Market. And many of you were polite and responsive positively to them. So I'll add this to the list. I've always had difficulty writing about Hilda, or maybe resisted, concerned that I wouldn't nail it. Quite simply, Hilda lit up the room when she entered. I always compared her to Anne Sheridan, Hollywood's oomph girl, self-assured, more appealing than prettier women. She had self-confidence and always found the humor in life. Hilda was everything to me as a 12-year-old and into adulthood. She was joyful, positive, encouraging, until she wasn't. I've always told my younger cousins, you should have known her back then. She was it. They only knew the resentful, impatient, often critical woman whose humor was more cruel than reflective. I wanted them to know that there was another woman in that body before Jerry died and before the slow erosion began. Of course, I knew Hilda from birth. She was the second of my father's four sisters in a family that was always nearby, everyone, cousins, grandparents, uncles, aunts, they all lived within 10 minutes by car. They'd drop in unannounced with cakes and fruit and hugs. They told stories, and Hilda was, well, she was Hilda. That was our world, birthdays and anniversaries, holidays, Sundays, something to share on television, the food, the family, and the hugs. And Hilda, my Aunt Hilda, she always had my attention. She had been in show business for 5 minutes, played the Capitol once, then the Catskills, and had a photo of her with young comics, one of whom was Phil Silvers, and I was so impressed. I was about six when Hilda married Henry in a ceremony held in my grandparents' living room. It seemed as if the honeymoon and the divorce took place about the same time. She was one of the few adult women I knew who worked, and everyone said it was just a stopgap until she met the right man, a real husband with a marriage that would last. In the meantime, at every family bacchanal, I took in her warmth and her wit. I think I was in the seventh grade when she discovered me. That's not to say she wasn't always the loving, hugging, dutiful aunt whose birthday and Christmas gifts were anticipated unexpectedly and original. But in family gatherings, I was one of at least a dozen beloved nephews or nieces. And as I recall it, we were all jabbering at my parents' living room, and I blurted out some remark. Hilda laughed, looked at me before, and she said to me, "You're really something." Later, she asked my parents if she could take me to a movie on a school night and go for deli afterwards. We had our first date. The movie we saw at the Fox Theater in Hackensack was Kismet with Ronald Coleman and Marlena Dietrich. After, she took me to the famous deli on Main Street and I was introduced to Chicken in the Pot. A man Hilda knew stopped by the table, and she introduced us and told him we had just been to see a movie. He asked how it was, and she said, "Well, it's the story of Baghdad. Marlena was the bag, Coleman was the dad." I laughed so hard that I almost choked on my chicken in the pot. I laughed uncontrollably, like only a 12-year-old can, out of control, with no social controls, no borders. I had never heard a grown-up make that kind of a jab. At that point, I thought that was the best day of my life. Hilda talked to me. She saw me as a person, not a child with obligatory familial adoration, but as a boy man with his own character, his own being. It was a uniquely singular feeling. We bonded. We both loved the baseball New York Giants, the movies, and we shared indignation of the world's wrongs. Hilda was the first adult who talked to me about the absurdity of racial disparity, of segregation. She wasn't a political activist, but she had clear opinions about issues facing the planet, along with a positive spin and humor. She was never hesitant in discussing fools and fascists. She invited me into the adult world. It's unlikely she would put a name on this, but she, in fact, was my first real teacher. I learned from her, not dates of historic events, but how to feel confident enough to ask questions, to think through an issue, one that was put forward there. There were hints of Auntie Mame for me, but Hilda was far more grounded than Mame. Jerry Weltman was the love of her life. I recall the day they visited us. It was important for Hilda that we shared her joy, my parents, but me. She wanted me to meet Jerry. And so when I attended their wedding, I told everyone that I've only been to two weddings in my life, and they were both Hilda's. Their marriage didn't interrupt our friendship. Hilda and Jerry often invited me over for dinner, just me, no adults around. And I loved the way they talked to each other and to me. I loved the way he looked at her, enthralled and amused. She was with the right guy. I was thrilled for her, for them. Andrea was born, the adored daughter. And then 2 years later, I was a freshman in college, working for the summer in Washington, D.C. between my first and sophomore years. My father called and told me that Jerry had died, a sudden heart attack. He died in her arms. He had just come home from work and fell into her arms. I immediately arranged to leave D.C. to come home. Hilda was at my grandparents' apartment on Teaneck Road, and Grandpa told me she was in the bedroom. I saw that vivacious, glorious woman in a state of nowhere. As I recall it now, more than 65 years later, she fell into my arms and I held her as we both sobbed for what seemed like forever. Several years later, Hilda married a man named Walter, who looked like he could have been Jerry's brother, but it was a mistake. Walter was humorless and abusive. Andrea, grown by this time, went to college, then moved to the West Coast. Hilda followed shortly after to San Francisco so she could be close to her daughter. She had prepared for the perfect life, but it involved into compromises. In retrospect, it seemed that she was living in Andrea's shadow. Our phone calls became infrequent, her visits east seldom. When I visited her in California, I became aware of her impatience, anger close to the surface, rare hints of her rich humor. I wondered, where was the woman of my childhood, she who gave me so much confidence and unequivocal love? In her visits to the East Coast, she stayed usually with her sister, my Aunt Ruth, Ruth's husband, Harold, and their four kids. The two youngest, Jeb and Rob, only saw the erosion, never the Hilda that was. It was particularly tough for me to be with her. The woman with whom I shared my dreams and my fears was nothing if not critical. It was all a memory. I refused to erase from my memory the great gift she gave me. I wanted to holler out, "Hilda, come back." But I knew that life gave her a cheap low blow when she couldn't navigate the emotions. And she gave me another lesson. I became determined that I would never allow the inevitable disappointments of life to reroute my goals and my dreams. Life has devious curves, and when you can be derailed, it's when you're not looking. Relationships are complicated, often painful. Careers are as predictable as the yellow brick road, and all around us are world events that can be devastating. As I saw this unhappy woman in her last years, I tried to remind her of her great gift to me. I hope she would have glints of happiness and or serenity. I don't know if that ever took place. I could tell her of my love and my appreciation, but only she could shape her last days. So in one of life's tantalizing twists, Hilda continued to be my teacher, a life of warning. But wasn't that 12-year-old lucky? I always think of that first date with Hilda as that date at the movies as my Columbus Day, because that's the day when I was discovered. Let's go to the music. I think Barbara Streisand.
Julie composed a brilliant score with lyrics by Stephen Sondheim for what many consider to be the greatest Broadway musical ever written, Gypsy. It tells the story of Mama Rose, who spent years trying to make her daughters famous, right? But really, she wanted to be famous herself. And one by one, they walk out on her. And she's left alone with her unfulfilled dreams. Why did I do it? What did it get me? Scrapbooks full of me in the background. Give them love, and what does it get you? What does it get you? One quick look as each of them leaves you. Thanks a lot, and out with the garbage. They take bows and you're back to zero. I had a dream, a wonderful dream, Papa. And if it wasn't for me, then where would you be, Miss Gypsy Rose Lee? Is it my turn? Don't I get a dream for myself? Starting now, it's gonna be my turn. I'm not some old book on a shelf. People sit on their butts. I got the dream, yeah, but not the guts. And that's okay.
perfect for some people of 105. But I at least got a try. When I think of all the sights that I gotta see at all the places I gotta play, all the things that I gotta be at, come on, Papa, what do you say? I'll tell you what I'll say. I'm gonna live and live now. Get what I want, I know how. One roll for the whole shebang. One throw, that bell will go clang. Eye on the target, I'm win. One shot, one rim shot, and bam! Hey, look at me. At least I didn't fake it. Hot, sir, I guess I didn't make it. Got ready for me, Lord, cause I'm a comer. I simply gotta march my heart's a drummer. No body, no, nobody is gonna win on my own. You bet your ass, Papa!
Streisand, one of a kind. Was that all right, the last word she said at the end? I don't know if, I guess that doesn't get us off the air. it was Betty Walker, not Betty White. Thank you all. Them's that like to catch me making mistakes. I want to call your attention to Brittany Griner. Have you read about the American woman basketball player? You know, many of the women, I get this from Walpin and Kornhauser on ESPN. Many of the women can't make enough money from the WNBA, and so they go overseas, and that's why they're in Turkey and Russia. And Brittany Griner is being held there, found with hashish in a trunk, whether it was planted or real. The fact is she's being held. And we're at a place diplomatically, she's a pawn because we are supplying Ukraine. Russia's at war with Ukraine. And Brittany, we're not in a position diplomatically to make a deal to get her freed. It's a horrendous situation for this woman, this talented basketball player. Who knows if the hash was, you know, if they didn't want her to have the hash, get her out of the country, let her come back to America. But it's an opportunity for the Putin government to show that they have some pull with us, some leverage, that they can make a difference. And while we are pleading with our State Department to get Brittany Griner freed to come back here, you know, it's like the Brad Davis character, Billy Hayes, is that his name, in the Turkish jail? It's a curious, terrible situation. I want to remind, last call, tickets for Wedding Band, Alice Childress's play, having a stunning revival, as I'm told by everyone. When I get to see it, I can give you my own opinion, but thank you for your kind words about it. It's at the Pulaski Center, about an interracial marriage. I saw it when it was at the Public with Ruby Dee. It's about a young Black woman in 1918 falling in love with a white man. And it's called Wedding Band. And it's at the Pulaski Center, the beautiful theater, the nicest theater in New York, even if it's in Brooklyn. All right, let me get the emails. And we have tickets for it all this week. No matinees, but you email me at dprfortune@hotmail.com. $50 for a pair of tickets. We have tickets for Bernadette. So many have written in for Romeo and Bernadette. I hope we have enough left. The new musical, which everyone's raging about. Americana, which I'm seeing tomorrow. The musical about the Dreamers. Beautiful, beautiful note from a listener who saw the show, liked it, and is buying tickets as a gift to a woman he met, a young woman who is a dreamer, and inviting her to see this musical about the struggle that's happening for young people. Maybe a musical can give it a wider audience than political speeches can. Belfast, the play at the Irish Rep, Hitler's Tasters, Michelle Brooks's very taut drama about women who had to taste Hitler's food before they went, all of that, all of those available this week. $50 to BAI. If you get a pair of tickets, you email me at dprfortune@hotmail.com. Give your phone number and you'll get a call from me, and we'll talk about it over the next day or two. Okay. Final song is from before our closing number is from King Pleasure. And I've told this to you before, probably. But in the summer of 1952, I was a teenager between my freshman and sophomore year in college. I went to D.C. to work for the summer, as I mentioned in the story about my Aunt Hilda. And we were a group of students with the Students for Democratic Action, the ADA student affiliate. And because in 1952, we were an interracial group, we were confined, for all intents and purposes, to the black area of Washington State today. We were all at a place called the Barksdale. It was like a pension. And our social life was across the street. We couldn't go to most places, movie theaters downtown or plays. We could only go in the black community as a group. If we wanted to see something, as I recall, the white kids didn't go into the white areas because we didn't want to justify the segregation. But our social life was mainly across the street, the American Veterans Committee, sort of the progressive version of the American Legion, where integrated groups gathered. And my friend Nancy Caleb from the University of Nebraska, she and I played the jukebox, and our two favorite songs, which we discovered that summer, were Pearl Bailey singing It Takes Two to Tango and our discovery of King Pleasure with Moody's Mood. And so when you hear this now, just think of two little kids, two teenagers in D.C. learning about the world and learning that Washington was a southern segregated city. We participated in sit-ins and we did a lot of other student action things then. But on many a night, we sat and listened to King Pleasure, just like this.
There I go, there I go, there I go, pretty baby, you are the soul who snaps my control. Such a funny thing, but every time you're near me, I never can behave. You give me a smile and then I'm wrapped up in your magic. There's music all around me, crazy music, music that keeps calling me so very close to you. Turns me your slave. Come and do with me any little thing you want to. Anything, baby, just let me get next to you. Am I insane or do I really see heaven in your eyes? Bright as stars that shine up above you and the clear blue skies. How I worry about you, just can't live my life without you. Baby, come here and don't have no fear. Oh, is there wonder why? I'm really feeling in the mood for love. So tell me why stop to think about this weather, my dear. This little dream might fade away. There I go talking out of my head again. Oh baby, won't you come and put our two hearts together? That would make me strong and brave. Ooh, when we're one, I'm not afraid, if there's a cloud up above us, go on and let it rain, I'm sure our love together will endure a hurricane. Oh my baby, won't you please let me love you and give relief from this awful misery.
What is all this talk about loving me, my sweet? I am not afraid, not anymore. understand me now, baby, please pull yourself together, do it soon. My soul's on fire, come on and take me, I'll be what you make me, my darling, my dear.
Oh, baby, you make me feel so good, let me take you by the hand, come let us visit our there in that new promised land. Maybe there we can find a good place to use a loving state of mind. I'm so tired of being without and never knowing what love's about. James Moody, you can come on in, man, and you can blow now if you want to. We're through.
I still love it. King Pleasure. On the Count is next at 10 o'clock. I'll again alert you that next week my guests will be Carolyn Wommers and her two attorneys. She's after serving 27 years in prison for a crime she said she did not commit. She's going to talk to us about how she's trying to clear her name. Final song from La Cage aux Folles, one of Jerry Herman's blasts that keeps on going till everybody in the house knows it by heart. We're going out with The Best of Times.
The best of times is now. What's left of summer but a faded rose? The best of times is now. As for tomorrow, well, who knows? Who knows? Who knows? So hold this moment fast and live and love as hard as you know how, and make this moment last, because the best of times is now, is now, is now. Forgotten yesterday. Now, tomorrow is too far away. So hold this moment fast and live and love as hard as you know how. This moment last, because the best of times is now, is now, is now.
The best of times is now. What's left of summer but a faded rose?
Who knows?
So hold this moment
Good morning. You're tuned to 99.5 FM, WBAI in New York. Any Saturday with David Rothenberg came to you live over listener-sponsored, non-commercial Pacifica Radio, WBAI in New York. Coming up at 10 o'clock is On the Count, so please stay tuned.
Hello, this is Dr. Michio Kaku, host of Exploration, which reports on the impact of science on society, which is usually heard every Wednesday evening. First of all, Exploration is moving. That's right. From now on, it'll be broadcast on Saturdays at noon. So write that down. Mark that down on your calendar. Our time slot has been moved to Saturdays at noontime. Second, let me emphasize the importance of supporting WBAI with whatever you can afford. One way is to become a WBAI buddy, a sustaining member in the name of Exploration for $10, $15 or more a month by calling 212-209-2950. Now, write that number down. It's 212-209-2950. Now, another way is to go to our website, WBAI.org. Click on to the WBAI button on the upper right-hand corner of the website. So please now, call 212-209-2950 or go to WBAI.org and make that pledge for social change.
Hard work is how we support ourselves and our families. The jobs we do are a big part of who we are. And our jobs keep America going. Yet, the job site is where we have the least power. Many of us voiceless as corporations gamble away our health and our family's future just to feed their greed. It's time for the working class majority, for you and me, to regain our voices, to turn up the volume, assert our collective power, and to organize. Join me, Rick Smith, every Saturday night from 6 to 8 p.m. right here on WBAI 99.5 New York as we bring the class war and fight for a better future. The Rick Smith Show, every Saturday night, 6 to 8 p.m. right here on WBAI 99.5 New York's listener-supported radio. For more information, visit WBAI.org. Hard work is how we support ourselves and our families. The jobs we do are a big part of who we are. And our jobs keep America going. Yet, the job site is where we have the least.
He's cool. He's exciting.
This dude is bad.
He's sexy. Okay, maybe not. He's a bad mother.
Shut your mouth.
He's Tony Ryan. On WBAI New York 99.5 FM. He's got both.
Right here with the sound of the trumpet.
Can you dig it?
Yeah, I can dig it, yeah.
He's got classic soul. He's okay. I can't think of anything else.
I'm Tony Ryan. Tune in Saturday nights, 10 p.m. to 1 a.m.
Soul Central Station with Tony Ryan.
99.5.